Good evening. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for joining me, I should say. Although when you join, you're joining all of us. I've been reading some Ram Dass lately, and he says, we're all just walking each other home, which is such a beautiful way of thinking of our practice, of the Sangha, of what the point is, of the idea of movement, of walking together, of serving each other. And at the same time being served. So we're walking each other home. So we're walking home together. I really like that image. Ram Dass said some amazing things. He was not a Zen master, but he was a deeply, deeply realized spiritual being. And very inspiring. Although when he also says something like about inspiration, that it's inspiration is inspiration is when you connect with the divine within you or something. That you've, it's this feeling of being inspired is because you're connecting with what's divine in you. So today I was thinking, all week I spend talking with you, exchanging with you and Doku-sans. I mean, you, some of the people on the screen, but actually the vast majority of the people who I have conversations with are not here on the screen. So, more than two-thirds of the people who I meet in Doku-san are not here right now. So I say you because many of you I do see, but there are many others who are not here who I see. And we're all just walking home together. We're just walking each other home, whether we're sitting here tonight or not. But something that comes up from time to time, regularly, is, someone will say, I haven't thought about my koan since the last time we met. I just thought about it the half an hour before our Doku-san when I was sitting or something. Or I didn't memorize it. Or I memorized it, but I have no idea what it's about. These are variations on the same theme. And so I said to someone recently, someone who said, but this could be anyone, right? Someone who said, yeah, I haven't thought about my koan since last week or since, I don't know, for a long time. I only thought about it when I was coming to the Doku-san. I have no idea. And I said, well, that I'm not surprised because originally this was a monastic practice. The koan practice was developed in monasteries where basically everyone was just sitting all day long and they had two Doku-sans a day with the teacher. So when they're working on their koan, something is really working. They are being worked by the koan. but they're really plunged into it. And so I said, I told this person, but I've probably said it a million times, maybe even to some of you, I don't know, that the challenge of our practice, our lay practice like this, we're trying to do this work with koans, study koans, practice koans, but outside of the original context. And the challenge is then to, how can we immerse ourselves in the koan? How can we become the koan without having the structure of sitting all day long and going twice a day to the dokusan? And you hear stories about how sometimes the monks didn't want to go to the dokusan because they didn't know. And they would be dragged by the attendant, by the jisha, to go to dokusan. They had to go to dokusan. A contrast with often in our retreats, where not so much in Wildflower, but I don't know, but if you've witnessed this in Dana Sangha retreats, where if there's an open dokusan line, there is a race to get in it. Big contrast from being dragged to go see the Roshi. And I say in Wildflower, that doesn't happen. And I'm not sure why. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. It just doesn't happen. Well, I'm not in the Zendo when it might happen. So I actually don't know if it happens or not. But there aren't very many occasions where there's open dokusan like that. So it's not the same situation. In any case, I told this person, because that is the context. And already it's difficult what we're asking ourselves to commit to and do. But if, you know, if we don't think about it except the half an hour before we come to dokusan, then we have very, very, very little chance of seeing anything in that koan, which is, so I'm not surprised that if you tell me you don't know what's happening in this koan and you haven't thought about it for a week, that's not surprising. Or if we are satisfied with memorizing it and then we just repeat it to ourselves or something, it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of the equivalent of not really being with the koan. We're with the words and we repeat the words, but we're not really delving into what is it? What's the heart of this? So, and that's what our practice is really about, whether it's koans, whether it's counting our breath, whether it's visualizations, reciting mantras, just sitting, as we say. It's really about delving deeply into the heart of the matter of this right now. Another thing that Ram Dass says is, we're fascinated by the words. By the words, we mean like any words. But it can be the koans, the words of the koan, memorizing it. It can be the words of the sutras. It can be reading books. It can be listening to Dharma talks. It can be having conversations just like in your workplace or something. Or with your partner, or with your family, or with your cats, whatever. We're fascinated by the words. But where we meet, Ram Dass says, your cat's doing something weird out there. But where we meet is in the silence behind the words. And that's what happens in dokusan as well. Sometimes people ask me when they're starting koan practice, or maybe even later on in practice, you know, how do we, sometimes I don't know if I passed the koan, right? Sometimes it's not clear for me, or I don't really know what I saw or something. And I say, trust me. Or first I usually say, well, maybe not, but I say, trust me, you know, can you trust me? That I, you know, have made this vow that I will not let any drop go to waste. I won't water down this practice ever. So if I pass you on a koan, it means that in some way or another, we have met in the silence behind the words. Even if you don't really, it's not really so clear, there is some, you do have some flicker of an idea of what you realized, but not totally. Trust that in our meeting, something has happened, that we have met behind, in the silence behind those words that we're saying. And that then maybe you can, if you can trust me, then you can start trusting yourself and pay attention. Okay, what did I feel in that moment? Even if I can't put it into words, even if I don't really know exactly what it was I experienced, that something happened, there was a feeling there that was different than what had happened before with the koan or something. And usually we have some kind of exchange and I say, okay, so what does that mean for you? How does that manifest in your life? Is there some other, you know, I suggest maybe another way of saying it, so, you know, different things like that, so that we can check, you know, so that you can become more aware of what's happened and I can maybe help us deepen that meeting in the silence behind the words. Even now, you know, didn't I say something like this recently that the when you listen to a Dharma talk and something resonates, it's because, oh no, that's what it's also Ram Dass, I think. It's something like when there's something that resonates, it's the me in you that is recognized. And it doesn't mean me particularly, you know, but it's the oneness. It's that silence where we meet. That emptiness, Buddha nature, mu, whatever you want to call it. However, there's lots of different words for it. But we become fascinated by the words. And then we hang on to them. And then we forget even what was behind them. Many times in your koan practice, you know, I will say, come back to mu. So what happened for you when you passed mu? And it's surprising, but we forget. I mean, when we're asked to remember to come back, then something is reminded. But it's always surprising for me, and I say we because I know that everybody does it, but it's surprising for me when someone has forgotten or thinks, oh, yeah, that's right. They're not thinking about it anymore. We lose sight of it because we've become fascinated with the words. It's become an abstraction in a sense. And Joshu, who started this whole thing with Mu, the abstract was of absolutely no interest for him. He was absolutely concrete here and now with whatever is here and now. He was not fascinated by the words. He used them freely. Every time he responded, yes, we have this whole book. I was telling someone about this week, so I forget who. this whole book of the recorded sayings of Joshu. So it's just this whole book of just things that he said, some of which have been made into koans, some not, you know. And every time it's different. It's just endless, endless, endless. But we become then fascinated with it. We make a book out of it, you know, and then become fascinated by the words. And then we miss the meaning behind them, that's in the silence behind them. And the same is true about, so, you know, becoming fascinated with words. We become fascinated with the word of practice, sitting, retreat, sangha, of course, Buddha, Dharma. We become fascinated with these words. And then they become abstract. And we've lost the silence. And then we, I'm not going to sit today. Or, oh, I'm not going to go to that Dharma group tonight. Or, I'm not going to become involved with the Sangha. Or, oh, I'm going to get a nice fancy Buddha statue. Or, you know, it becomes abstract. It seems like it's really concrete, but it becomes abstract. And the way to find that silence behind the words, the only way is to become quiet, to become, as again, Ram Dass, so you can see I've been reading, and he's very quotable, so, because he has these little snippets of things, kind of like Joshu. But he said, what was it? Something like, it's the quiet. So the quieter you become, the more you hear. Seems obvious, right? So it's like the quieter you become, the more you will see your koan, the more you will hear it, what's there, the silence that's there. And becoming quieter, of course, we know when we sit for a few days and retreat, we see immediately that we've become quieter. It's not necessarily like, it's quieter in our being, let's say, you know, and our minds have become quieter. So we're not like caught up in the fascination with all the stuff going around in our minds. Like that image that I often give for introductions of a jar of muddy water. And when we shake it up, the water is not clear. There's dirt and mud and you can't see through it. It's kind of brown water. But if you put that jar down then and let it sit, then all of the dirt and sand will settle to the bottom and the water will be clear. But then as soon as you shake it again, it becomes cloudy again. So our sitting practice is like that, putting that jar down. And the quieter you become, the more you can hear. Just like the more you can see, the more, the less movement, the clearer the water becomes, and then you can see more. So we can hear it. It's like in retreats when I introduce the silence and ask people to respect the silence. It's so that we can listen to the silence, so that we can hear what's behind all of the chatter and the chatter of this world in which we live, you know. And the thing is that when we practice regularly, because this is all about regular practice. I heard my Qigong teacher say the same thing this morning to someone, a new person who had arrived, and he was saying, you know, the best is to do it regularly, just like I would say to people about sitting. The best thing is to do it regularly, even if it's just 10 minutes, regular. He said, you decide when you're going to do it, like what I say about meditation, you know. He said, I brush my teeth and then I practice and then I go practice. Because it's all about regularity. So you can say, oh yes, I practice. I have a koan and I go to Dokusan once a week. Okay. But that, like we said, the regularity is what's going to help you become quieter, become clearer, and then really hear the silence. Feel the silence, experience the clarity of it. It doesn't mean that we're not involved in our daily lives, in all of the busyness that we have, whether it's work, family, taking care of your house, finding a house, getting your car fixed, talking to your children, whatever it is, feeding the cats. All of that, there is silence behind that. But usually we just don't hear it because we're not quiet. I remember once my Dharma brother, Frank Roshi, many, many, many years ago, like not long after he had passed Mu. So this is like way at the beginning of his practice. And he said to me, you know, I feel like they've been playing tricks on us all this time. You know, I feel like they've almost been, you know, he didn't say lying, but tricking us with all the Zen texts and everything. And now suddenly I can see it, you know. But all this time it was like they're tricky. It's tricky. They're tricking us. They're playing a trick on us or something. And I didn't really agree, but I knew exactly what he was talking about, but I didn't really agree, you know, because, and what I always say and what all the Zen masters always say is, you know, the secret isn't that you're not being told. There's no secret that's not being told. The secret is that you can't hear it. So you can't hear the secret, which is that you can't hear it. You know, that's a Zen thing. So that comes back to this quieting down, becoming quiet so you can hear it. And that's the case with your koans. That's the case with whether it's, you know, koan in a list, in a book or something, or whether it's the koan of your life. The koan of this great mystery of life and death. Letting go of coming home, you know, walking home together, walking each other home. What is home? That's a great koan. What is home? When you get there, you realize there is no there, but you have to get there. That's one of, you know, Frank Roshi's tricks, playing a trick on us. But it's not a trick, actually. It's not a trick. I don't think he would say that today, Frank, 30 years later, but we're talking about, you know, young Zen student. Actually, he started practicing before I did, so I was kind of the young Zen student at the time, the younger Zen student at the time. So, that I will become quieter and hear what is in that silence behind the words that you might have to share. Or questions, you don't have to like share anything. Did this raise any questions, or can you recognize anything in it in your own practice? Bart?
Yeah, I was a little bit triggered by your remark about those monks, maybe nuns in a monastery. Having all the time, twice a day, going to Dokusan, etc. I think we might have an other advantage in our life, which is that we can use our daily life in work, family, whatever it is, to make this koan work in our life. And so to recognize something, how it's working. Again, like you said, I need that quieting down to hear that or see that or feel that or experience that. But I think it's an advantage over being in a monastery and having nothing to do except for begging for money or for food.
Yeah, great. And can we see, you know, that's another thing Ram Dass was great about, because he had a terrible stroke when he was, I don't know, 80 years old or something, and was in a wheelchair, could barely talk, had to have people, you know, taking care of him 24/7, and yet was still luminous, full of joy and love, because he, like Bart, you say, his whatever presented itself was practice. So whatever it was a possibility to be to transform, to awaken. And he even said, I think, after his stroke, that before his stroke, he had been like in this, I think he called it a phase or a plane, you know, like a plane of almost denying the body and the physical and the concrete worldly world of being a man, human vehicle here and now. I think that's not entirely true, but he said that he needed that stroke to like awaken him again and bring him more into contact with, like Bart, like you say, is just this, whatever it is, here it is. Can we listen to it, whatever it is? And yeah, see it as, you know, the best practice is always your practice, always your life. That's your best practice. Whether it's in a monastery or as a householder, well, someone disappeared and so the whole configuration just changed. Very strange, isn't it? Keeps us on our toes, impermanence.
Good evening, everyone. I remembered It's the book, I think it's called Beyond Spiritual Materialism. I think that's the name of Shogyam Trungpa's book. I remember
Cutting through spiritual.
exactly. Thank you. Yes. Cutting through spiritual. So as usual, it's a collection of Dharma talks with questions and answers in the end. And I never forgot this for some reason. Someone asks him, because I'm not very familiar with his story, but he left, I'm not sure if it's Tibet, he left somewhere to go to wherever he went afterwards, to the West. And so I remember someone asks him, how was it for him being without his teachers, not having his teachers around anymore? And who were his teachers at this moment? And I never forgot his answer. He said that my teacher is the moment. Each moment is my teacher. Yeah. So, and I never forgot that answer. Each moment is my teacher.
Yeah, beautiful. And if we, so that's another example of, it's not that it's not being told. It's not that it's not here. It's just that we don't hear it or see it. Debbie.
Hi, everybody. I had the pleasure in the last 2 weeks, yeah, it took me about 2 weeks, to finally read Meisner's book. I didn't find it, and Joao lent it to me. And this is very much his point too. And you can read the same thing 20 times and all of a sudden, well, first of all, the book was had a very strong effect on me. I was reading it concentrated, which I rarely had the time to do. So it was like I was as if I were hearing him every day. But he goes over this too, saying, you are living the life of Buddha. This is a Buddha life that you're living. That's probably not exactly the way he phrased it. It really struck me. It really, all of a sudden, it seemed very true somehow.
Yeah. Well, and so that's an example of, so in that moment when you say it struck you and it sounded true, that's the moment where you meet in the silence behind the words. Absolutely. Because you can hear that and say, oh yeah, I'm living the life of the Buddha. Oh no, I'm not. What's he talking about? Or oh yeah, okay, that sounds really nice or something. But to have this reaction like you have, that's it, And sometimes these books fall into our hands, when it's the right moment. Like completely, because that book's been around for what? Like, I don't know. I don't know what year it came out, but 25 years probably or something. I don't know.
Well, I've known about it since I started going to Dhamma, so that was 22 years ago, yeah, and probably a little bit before that. But the other thing I wanted to say, if you all had the time, I saw it today, yesterday. There's a very nice YouTube piece on Meisumi, on a documentary. He's already dead. No, but there are moments of him. There are moments of you all, and I think I saw you. And I was kind of looking out. I didn't see Geno Roshi, but where you are coming together somewhere in the States to commemorate.
Oh yeah, at
Yes.
CCLA, yeah.
And there I saw Frank, Willem, a whole bunch of people I knew. But there are different people talking about Meisumi and Bernie and going on about different moments that they spent with him. It's very moving and interesting and about 40 minutes. Yeah, it's nice.
Do you know what it's called, the film?
Well, I just looked up Meisumi Roshi and hit upon this thing. So I don't know if it has a title, I'm sure. It's more or less led by Genpo and Bernie. I mean, led. they're the ones that intervene the most. And every once in a while, there's shots of this commemoration. A couple of moments with his daughter, who plays guitar. It's very lovely. And his wife.
I think I know that. I think it's like from a Dutch television
program or something. Yeah. Because every once in a while, there are two Dutch people speaking to each other, and there are no subtitles. But there are Dutch subtitles otherwise, and the one I saw.
Yeah, great. Yeah, and the title of the book is Appreciate Your Life. So it's beautiful. Sorry.
Did you know him? Did you have the opportunity?
I never met him, no.
Because even in film, you get he's got a real twinkle in his eye. Besides the fact that what he's saying is interesting, there's this kind of,
And you know what's extraordinary Debbie, you know Yuri. I mean, he and Yuri, they really do look alike. Yuri is his son, who is my Qigong teacher, actually, but.
I told him that the other day. And afterwards, I thought, does he hear this every single time? But the mouth expression, yeah, very similar.
The title is not only Appreciate Your Life, then the real thing is the subtitle. Because it says the essence of Zen practice.
Oh yeah.
And actually, I realized this when I was present online for Scott Sensei's coming out ceremony a couple of years ago. I remember I was on vacation. I was on my phone for the Zoom call, and I couldn't get the phone to stand up. Straight, it kept falling down on the table, so I didn't have much with me. It was early morning, so I got a book. It wasn't enough, and then I had this book with me, and then I used it to help keep the phone straight. And that's when then it was my turn to speak. And in that exact moment, that's when I realized, everything is here. It's not only appreciate your life, but then immediately afterwards it tells us this is the essence of Zen practice. This it's all here on the cover. So that was interesting.
So it's not surprising that, you know, those of us who descend from him, even though I never met him, but what is transmitted is that. It's not surprising, you know. And we all say it in our own ways because we all have different lives and we have different ways of manifesting it. You know, because Juan was talking and mentioned Scott, I remember what Scott once said to Juan, you know, Scott, who has two kids, job, you know, completely ordinary English life in the middle of England, never could come and live with Geno Roshi. You know, it was hard for him to travel. And yet he said, he asked himself, he told this to Joao, am I willing to make this my practice? Am I willing to let go of the idea that something else should be my practice? Am I willing to appreciate my life? You know, is a way of saying it. And it's interesting, this word willing, because it's like, you do have the choice. No. To make it your practice or not. That's what I mean. And does it say what year that book was, Joao?
Well, I found This is a copyright from 2001. That's the date I can find. Yeah,
that's probably right.
Yeah. I think this edition is this printing is, I think it's 2002, but I see here the copyright White Plama Sangha Inc. 2001. So
yeah.
You think it should be this?
Yeah, that's probably right. I know it was, you know, at least 5 years after he died.
Okay. So yeah. So it should be that.
What comes is how easy it sounds. It's just this, and at the same time, sometimes it's just, you know, it's just this, and it's just you just don't see it. But it's so simple, and it's can be quite frustrating at times. You feel it, but then you just you're somewhere stuck.
It's true. It's true. And it's, you know,
not endless.
What?
And it's endless.
What is endless?
Well, you see it and then you don't, and then you see it and then you don't, and it starts again over and over and over again, always.
It's true. And seeing that is also endless.
Is also what?
Endless. Seeing that we can see it and then not see it. But usually we don't pay attention to that, to the third point, I mean. But yeah, Freddie.
Thich Nhat Hanh said that we are part-time Buddha. That's why we practice.
Can you repeat that? I'm sorry, I missed a word.
We are part-time Buddha. That's why we practice.
In order to realize that we're not part-time Buddhas. You know, like the Confucius, we have two lives. The second one starts when we realize we only have one. So something else that Ram Dass said, which ties in, is that he said when he used to celebrate weddings, you know, when people in his sangha would get married and he would perform the wedding, he would always see it like a triangle. That there were the two partners, the two people getting married, and then a third being or force that emerged out of their interaction, which, you know, you could call, he called it shared awareness or the silence behind them, you know? And I feel like we can say the same thing about the Sangha. That there is this, each of us are individuals and we come together and we sit here on the screen or we don't, or we come together in person. And then there's this thing we call the Sangha, but there's actually the silence behind each of us, each of our individualities, that is what is the Sangha. You know, it's the impersonal that emerges from this interaction of all of our personals, like with rituals. So when we chant, unfortunately, on the screen, we don't do the chanting collectively. I don't really know why. I guess because it sounds weird or something. But, or the sound isn't, it's difficult to have a coherent sound or something. But, we join together as one. You know, that's the silence behind it. And you can call it silence, you can call it awareness, you can call it love, emptiness, mu, true nature. Debbie.
Rushi, was Ram Dass officially a practitioner of a specific religion?
Yeah.
Yeah. What, Hinduism?
Hindu, yeah, Hindu.
Thank you.
His, I forget what the name of his teacher was. I can't remember.
His guru is also on YouTube. I went to look because they all talk about this guy as if he made you levitate. And you can, and I don't know if he talks, but you can see him in any case. Yeah.
Right. And I've seen pictures of him too. Well, and Ram Dass originally, I mean, his name was Richard Alpert. He was, you know, this like professor at Harvard with Timothy Leary experimenting with LSD. And then that opened his mind and he went to India and realized that the answer was not LSD. And then found his teacher and became Ram Dass. And then came back to his teacher, sent him back to the US to teach.
I don't want to monopolize the situation, but I love Ram Dass. He at one point gave his teacher LSD. The teacher said, let me see this thing that you're doing. And Ram Dass said so. And the teacher said, love is stronger.
Beautiful, huh? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe that's a good note to end on. Thank you.